Oh, listen to that music. You can't hear music like that, Calliope or Calliope, as some people call it, music, and not think about the circus. And we're going to be talking about the circus today. Did you ever want to join the circus when you were a kid or run away to the circus? Well, Bonnie Graves is with us. She's the author of a number of books, and her latest is set at a circus in the 1930s. Bonnie, by the way, is an author of, dozens of children's books, both fiction and nonfiction, professional books on teaching reading. She spent her growing up years in Wisconsin and Southern California as a former elementary school teacher. Her work has won many awards, and her latest is called Catch Me When I Fall. So maybe you have some questions about what the circus was like. What would you like to know about maybe publishing a book or writing for children? This book, I think, is aimed a little bit at middle school children. But you know what? I read it, and I really liked it. I had a lot of fun reading it. Bonnie Graves with us by phone. Bonnie, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. I'm so happy to be here, and wow, that was quite the introduction. Thank you, and happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you as well. And it really was a lot of fun reading your book. It brought back a few memories for me, first, about going to the circus with my grandmother. I remember doing that, and my brother and my sister.
Uh-huh.
And it was really pretty exciting. And so your book is about the circus a little bit, and we learn a lot about what the circus was like back in the 30s, but mm-hmm. it's also a kind of a mystery too. So tell us, tell our listeners about the book a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, actually, I'd like to read what's on the back cover, because I think it kind of gives, a little glimpse into it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Perhaps better than I could say. It's set in Racine, Wisconsin during the Great Depression. Catch Me When I Fall is the story of one gutsy 12-year-old girl's quest to learn the identity of her father, the father her mother refuses to talk about. What's the big secret? When Emma finds a photograph hidden in her mother's bureau and spots a circus poster featuring Filippo, the flying wonder, she believes she stumbles on the truth. The aerialist resemblance to the man in the secret photo is too close to be a coincidence. Rebelling against her mother's warning not to go near the circus, Emma disguises herself as a boy and lands a job with the circus, determined to unravel the dark mystery that haunts her.
Well,
here amidst the stardust and illusions of circus life that Emma makes discoveries about her past that ultimately help her accept herself for who she truly is.
Well, I tell you what, you fooled me too, because I thought I knew how it was all going to turn out, and I was wrong, and we won't say any more about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I kept you in suspense. That's the writer's duty.
Oh, well, you set this story in Racine. You grew up, at least part of your growing up years was in Racine area. Is that why you chose Racine?
Yes, in part. Actually, the inspiration or the first inclination came from a memoir that my uncle had written about his experience at the circus. And it was so full of vivid details about him getting a job, watering the elephants, and how he so desperately wanted that ticket to the big show, because this was during the Depression, you know, nobody had any money. And, of course, no TV and other things that kids can go to today to get their entertainment. So I just had to, it just kept haunting me, this story that I wanted so much to be able to tell in a longer version.
Well,
so that was the beginning for me.
Yeah. Well, that makes some sense. And I tell you, I haven't read your other books, but you've certainly have a great character there in Emma.
Well, thank you.
Is there a lot of her, of you and her?
Well, there's some of me in Emma, but there is a lot in Emma that is not me. I'm not as brave as Emma. I could never have done what she did in so many respects. But what is similar is that I never knew my father after age 9. And my mother kept his identity a total secret. In fact, it was taboo in our family to even speak his name. And this wasn't just our immediate family, but the relatives too. And so there's this dark mystery around this man who was my father. So this is what was I was exploring, I think, through Emma.
Yeah.
That she wanted to find out who her father was.
Yeah, this was a really kind of a heartfelt. I can now see, hearing what you just said, I can now see why the writing, your writing is so heartfelt in so many places when she's talking about her dad. What was it difficult to go back through the eyes and see things through the eyes of a young girl? You've written a lot of children's books. So you've had a little practice at it.
Yes, I suppose you would say I have had a lot of practice at it. Many, 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 many manuscripts, some published, luckily, and some still unpublished. And for your readers, that's where I am, in
your
the reading
readers.
Mode. For your listeners who might be interested in pursuing writing themselves and publishing, I would just recommend just keep at it, keep writing. And the more practice you have, obviously, in anything we do, practice is the way to success.
Yeah. I enjoyed learning a bit about the circus back in those days, and you must have done, in addition to reading your relative's account, you must have done quite a bit of research of your own.
Oh, many, 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 many hours of research, because I knew very little about the circus. Just having gone there, you know, as a kid, seeing circus movies, reading circus books. But the actual nitty-gritty of circus life, that had to be researched in every detail. I had to know how they put up the tent. I have pages of diagrams of how they put up the tent. I had to contact people who knew how to fly, who were circus flyers. I got a lot of help from Laura Rapa and Lindsay Voris, and lots of help from Ned Kronberg, who's a historian, circus historian. But many, many, many hours spent researching to get as accurate as I could. And then, of course, I had my circus pal Ned read the book for accuracy.
Yeah.
And he put his stamp on it.
So I bet people are wondering, or maybe wondering, what the circus was like back in those days. Can you describe the circus for us?
Oh, man. Oh. Well, it was a busy, busy place. And the circus that I had to use for my story had to be one that came in and had a matinee and left, because that's what I needed for the conflict of the story. So the circus wagons would pull up before dawn and start assembling all the, you know, getting the animals out, getting the animal tents, getting the sideshow, and then many tents and a whole city behind the big top, which it went up after the smaller tents, where all the circus people would practice and, you know, have their lunch and so on and so forth. So it was just like a miniature city set up right there in Racine.
And really, a lot of people involved. You think about all the people it takes to put the tents up and take them down, and then not only that, but the performers and the animals.
Yes, so many animals. And then they have the big circus parade even before they have the big show to get the people of the town, you know, to come and watch the circus. So they parade the animals. And not just a few, you know, just I don't know how many. I think there were 12 elephants in my story. And, of course, they had all sorts of exotic lions and tigers and bears and monkeys and parrots and the whole menagerie. In fact, there was a whole menagerie tent where they kept the animals when they weren't doing an act. And then the big show had three rings, or something's going on in each ring. So you kind of had to move, you know, from one ring to the other with your attention. And then, of course, the big event for Emma were the aerialists, where she was hoping to see the man who she suspected might be her father.
Yeah. Talking today with Bonnie Graves, author of dozens of children's books, both fiction and nonfiction, and her latest is called Catch Me When I Fall, set in the Depression era of the 30s, and talks about a young girl and her quest to find out about who her father was. And yeah, the setting is really the circus at that time. Questions for her, comments. Did you attend the circus? What were your remembrances from those times? Maybe have some questions about the book itself or about writing. I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer today. Sarah Hopeful, our engineer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. A bit later on in the show, we'll be hearing from Dave Barry, humorist and author, about his latest book. It's called The Simple Joys of an Old Happy Dog. But right now, we're visiting with Bonnie Graves about her latest book. It's called Catch Me When I Fall. We learn about Depression-era circuses, really a book, I think, that's aimed mostly at children. But I enjoyed reading it myself, so you might like it too. Maybe read it and then pass it on to those middle schoolers that you might have in your house, or maybe your grandkids. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. Now let's take a call. Linda in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just was going to say that she brought up some good memories. My grandmother moved to California from Iowa in the 1920s and worked in a hardware store down there. And the circus came to town. And I really think she made quite good friends she was a good friend of the giant. And I can't remember names or the name of the circus now, but I have a large picture of their big giant, you know, the big circus parade. And as she talks about that, it makes me think about it. So it was just kind of interesting.
Well, Linda, and you went to the circus yourself?
I did not go to that circus. It was in the 1920s.
Oh,
it was
my
grandmother. Yeah, and it was my grandmother who had many fond memories and talked about it. And, you know, like I say, I have a great big, or I shouldn't say great big, but a 10x14 picture of it. And then her father called her home and said he was sick and wanted her to marry somebody. But
oh, boy. Wow.
I think she had really a good connection with the giant.
Linda, thank you so much for calling. Bonnie, there's a story right there for you.
I know. I was going to tell her she should start writing all that down.
Oh. Well,
save it for posterity, indeed. Yeah, that's really special.
Do you get comments from readers and so forth about their own remembrances of the circus?
You know, I have not gotten very many people talking about the circus. No, more about the connection with Emma.
Yeah, and that connection with them. Well, and you lived it yourself.
Basically, yeah.
You lived it yourself, and so I could see why that would touch a lot of people who probably were in the same circumstance.
Yeah, it could be. I hope so. If, you know, I think about that, all the girls out there who may have grown up without a father, and if this would be kind of a way to connect with them.
Yeah, I think that would be, I think that definitely would be a way to connect with them. Talk a bit more about Emma. What she
Emma
was like.
Emma is, she's rebellious because she has a quest, and she has to rebel against her mother, who is dead set against her going to the circus. And you learn, more about that as you read the story. She can't figure out why her mother does not want her to go by the go near the circus, or that she doesn't talk about her father. But Emma just cannot live with the unknown. And when she sees the picture of Filippo, the Flying Wonder, the poster in the grocery store, the drugstore, she thinks that his resemblance is too great to the picture that her mother has secreted in her bureau that Emma has seen. So she must go and find out if this man could be her father, and that drives her completely through the whole story, trying to find this Filippo the Flying Wonder, talk to him, and ask him about, show him the picture and see if he will tell her if he is actually her father.
Yeah. I like that you had her kind of dress up as a boy, and we learned a little about watering elephants back in that time.
Well, you know, she had to dress up as a boy, and this is another thing in writing the story. My uncle, of course, is a boy at that time, and it would be easier for a boy to get a job at the circus. So Emma knew that she could not possibly land a job dressed as a girl. So she had to dress as a boy. And I knew that I couldn't really give justice, I didn't think, to a boy's voice in this. I don't know why, because I have written with the boy as a protagonist in other books. But I just kind of felt with this one, maybe it's because I felt such an attachment right away to the story and saw how, you know, it might work for Emma to have the quest of finding her father.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, let's go to Dave and Stevens Point next. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling, bud.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering if maybe you had some advice for an amateur writer. When you are writing like a chapter book, do you complete the whole thing and then hope to get published? Or are you sending like a first chapter or collection of a first couple of chapters to a publisher, see if there's any interest? And then is there any like a publisher that you would recommend that are open to, you know, not established writers that are?
Yeah. Okay, great questions. There are a lot of them there. Let's see if I can unpack that a bit. Okay, well, how do I write? You know, with each project, it's a little bit different. Sometimes I will just write, if it's a short chapter book, I might write the first couple of chapters and then maybe kind of, you know, just outline the last couple ones, maybe, or I might take the character and let the character just figure out what's going on. I kind of know in advance where it's going. That's one thing that is usually true with each of them. I think you're more interested in how do you get your stories published. Unfortunately, today, many of the houses are closed to unsolicited manuscripts. That means you can't just send them to the publisher because they won't read them. They just get so many submissions. But there are a few that are still taking unsolicited manuscripts. And the best thing probably you could do would be to, if you're interested in writing for children, is that what you are?
Dave, is that what you're at?
Yeah, like kind of preteen-ish, you know.
Okay, all right, yeah. So if you go to an organization like Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, they will have a listing of publishers that will that you can see if they will take unsolicited manuscripts and try them. The most likely that you would have now would be probably smaller presses rather than the big New York presses right now. Is that helpful? Or what, you had some other questions, I think, I didn't have answer.
No, I think you covered everything. That was very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All
Good
right.
luck. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Larry, can I just interject something right here?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
You know, I think for most writers who eventually get their manuscripts published, it takes a lot of perseverance. If there's one quality that I think you will find from most writers who've been published is that they just keep persevering. They have to learn to deal with a lot of rejection because that is the name of the game. You just have to put yourself out there and keep trying, keep going, and eventually it will happen if you're persistent enough and do your homework, read the genre that you're interested in writing, read your favorite authors, they're your teachers, and just keep writing and revising and submitting. And eventually, hopefully, there will be a publication in your future.
Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking about a writer whose name I've just blanked on a little bit, but she wrote these Cat Who mysteries. So it was about a guy, and he had a couple of cats, and the cats often helped him solve whatever mystery there was. And she had some success, and then that genre kind of went out of favor with people.
Uh-huh.
And what she did was she just kept writing them, and she didn't try to publish them for a while. And then that genre came back in vogue, and she had another 10 books that she sent out one a year or so.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great story because this is what happens in publishing. You know, there'll be fantasy will be in vogue for a while, and then it will be something else. So you never know. You cannot follow the trends. You just have to write what you want to write, what Virginia Hamilton has said, writing is what you know, remember, and imagine. And I think that is very true.
Yeah. Jane in Medford, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, I'm from Ogemaw, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And my cousin Wayne Franzen ran a small circus, and he went from Florida up to Wisconsin every summer.
Wow.
In the 70s and the 80s, and both parents, when they retired, ran away and joined the circus. And
oh, wow.
My mother became a clown with the circus. It was the most fun she had ever had at 63. She became a plant in the audience and was a clown with the circus, and she just had so much fun. And my father helped collect and get all the food for the lions and the tigers and the elephants and whatever. He was a master of getting kind of, you know, good deals of the local farmers and stuff. But this circus was a small one-ring circus, and it came to Medford and Prentice and Reblake and Phillips. So often, I mean, every summer, people look forward to seeing it. It was run by Wayne Franzen and his family.
Oh, man.
What a great story.
That is a great story. So he must have been a kind of a showman himself, and he must have enjoyed being around people and animals.
trained animals. He was raised on a dairy farm and by Phillips, and Paul Niebauer was one of his main speaker and director, and he did the announcing, and it's just a very good show.
Oh, well, that's a great family memory. Jane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
I enjoyed hearing that. I that may have been the kind of circus. I can't even remember. I mean, I was so little when my grandma took me to this one circus. I think it might have been a two-ring circus. Were there one, two, and three-ring circuses out there?
Where is that? Is Jane still on?
No, no, Jane's gone. I was just asking you, Bonnie.
Where were they?
I was just wondering if there were. I mean, there were obviously. Jane's relative had a one-ring circus.
Yeah. Where we were in Racine when I grew up?
Yeah, and just in historical perspective.
Oh,
were there,
yeah, sure.
Two-ring circuses and
three-ring? Circuses, yeah. The one that that I used for the story, of course, I made up the name for the circus, but it was a huge three-ring circus. And I think back in that era, that wasn't terribly unusual, but it wasn't unusual either to have the smaller circuses, as I understand it.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask my friend Ned.
Well, you know, as I was reading about the, you know, the bears and what the bears were doing, and I'm thinking, you know, today that kind of thing probably wouldn't be able to get away with it, shall we say?
I guess I heard from one reader, you know, that the circuses are really having a hard time now because of the, you know, the animal rights activists and so on. And, you know, she was saying that the animals are really an important component of the circus, and they're well cared for and, you know, not abused. I think she said they've gotten a bad rap on that. So they certainly were an important part of the circus that Emma saw.
Yeah. Were in the book itself, were you, I think your book was kind of aimed at what, middle schoolers, fifth, sixth graders, somewhere in there?
You know, I guess I do try and keep my audience in mind, but when I'm writing, mostly I'm in the body and soul and the voice of the main character. And so I'm hoping that she will feel authentic and feel authentic to the reader. And whomever picks up the book, if there's something in it that resonates with them, then that's wonderful. But I think you're right. The younger child is probably not quite ready for it. I would say the readers for this book would be starting at age 10, maybe 9, if they're you know, somewhat sophisticated. But you know, kids are so much more sophisticated these days than they were in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and as I said, I enjoyed reading it. So you think it's one of those, you're going to buy one for your 12-year-old while you can sit down and read it yourself first. And you know, you have to keep certain things in mind when you are writing for that age group in terms of what you write, what you describe, and so forth.
Right. So her experiences, you know, she's 12, so her experiences are appropriate for most 12-year-olds, and maybe some younger and older. So
yeah, for sure. And this whole, I want to go back to the whole business about her being illegitimate. I think that's a topic that wouldn't have been talked about not that long ago in children's literature. What's changed there?
Yeah, I don't. What has changed? Is that your question?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think probably the media has helped in that. Television, things that, you know, you see on television now are not what you saw back 20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
They're just more explicit. Children aren't sheltered so much from grown-up things. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm not going to make a judgment on that. But
no.
Back when Emma lived, oh, so taboo. I mean, she just felt very different not having a father,
yeah,
as I did.
Well, and I think, you know, one thing else that comes through in the book is just kind of like the difficulties of having single parent homes at that time, probably any time, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That is a tough row to hoe, and particularly with Emma's mother in the Depression, having taking in the cousins that she had and the grandfather. And I was just lucky that she did have a job working as a housekeeper for the doctor in town.
Well, she's a really interesting character, and it's the kind of character I thought, you know, I would read more about her at some point. Do you have anything else in mind for Emma?
For Emma? You know, I don't know. She hasn't been tickling at me yet. Maybe she will. Maybe she will.
And you had her reading a Nancy Drew mystery in the book. Are you a fan of that girl detective?
Oh, of course. You know, I think every young girl probably read a Nancy, you know, all the Nancy Drew series. I'm sure I went through the whole thing. And I don't know, who doesn't love a mystery?
And I think it's kind of important. It's kind of cool for kids to have a role model. And in fiction, because I think it, if nothing else, if they read one book about the person, about this other kid, let's say,
uh-huh,
becomes a role model.
Right.
Then I know my own daughter, who's 15 now, she gets going on a book, and then she wants to read the next one.
Yeah.
And the next one, and the one uh-huh after that, and she's uh-huh reading.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. No, that's true. I think most kids do like series books just because they get to know the character and they want to know more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess my hope is, as this is launched out into the world, that that Emma will find her way into the hands and hearts of readers, and her story will resonate in some way and maybe bring comfort or laughter, a bit of wonder or hope or courage.
Yeah. Margot emailed and wondered how long it took you to write this book, and like how many drafts did you have to go through?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that is a great question. Well, I can't give you a specific answer on how many drafts, but probably in the range, and I hope you don't fall over on this, probably 50.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Oh, and it probably took, because it took a lot of research over the years,
mm-hmm,
you know, it probably took at least a decade. Now, I was writing other things then, too. It wasn't just sitting at my computer and working on this story. There are other things going on in my life, so that's kind of why, too. But sometimes you have to wait to find answers to things. You have to find people who can help you with the answers, find the circus people. And I use the Wisconsin Historical Society site quite a bit, you know, just to get the history right. So,
and when you were working on this particular book, you know, you said it took a long time. Were you working on other books as well? Do you kind of keep a couple of books going at the same
time?
Sure,
yeah. Yes. And also probably working on the textbook, the reading textbook with my husband.
Oh, so you do a lot of writing that is nonfiction as well, or you have done.
I have. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. I have.
So this book is going to be out. Do you get to do a little tour around locally or regionally to promote it?
I'm a terrible promoter, Larry. Oh, you know, I'm a Lutheran, and we Lutherans don't like to, you know, go and show off ourselves or our stuff. So it's very hard for me to, you know, go on and promote. I have a lovely publicist who's helped me do the things that I don't like to do, like manage my Facebook page. So if people want to check out my Facebook page, it is Author Bonnie Graves.
It's Author Bonnie Graves?
Mm-hmm. Author Bonnie Graves is the name of the page.
All right. And then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I do not even have a website. I know, I'm so terrible.
but Author Bonnie Graves,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Is the Facebook page.
Correct, correct.
And people can get copies of the book.
Oh, yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, their local bookstore, if they ask for it, will order it.
Yep, absolutely.
Easy to do. And so,
and it's called Catch Me When I Fall. I really did enjoy reading your book, Bonnie, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Larry. It's my pleasure, truly, truly.
Bonnie Graves, she's authored dozens of children's books, both fiction and nonfiction, and professional books on teaching reading. She spent her growing up years in Wisconsin and Southern California as a former elementary school teacher as well, and really fun talking with her about her book. And it really was, for me, it was an interesting and fun read, and it's not wasn't meant really for me, but I enjoyed it anyway. What the heck? And you might enjoy it, and your 12-year-old or older will enjoy it as well. Again, it's called Catch Me When I Fall. Well, do you have a pet? Do you have a? I have cats. I don't have a dog right now. My daughter wants a dog. And I'm thinking about who's going to take care of the dog. And there's all kinds of things about dogs. But I know I had a dog, most of my growing up years. And I learned a few things from it and from that dog, or those dogs. I think we had about three. Dave Barry has always, well, he had a period there where he didn't have a dog. But for the most of his career, his life, he's had a dog. And he's written a book about the lessons that he learned from his latest dog, Lucy. And Lessons from Lucy, The Simple Joys of an Old Happy Dog. He learned a lot from that dog, and he learned a lot from other things in his life, too. He's a hilarious book out. We'll talk with Dave Barry next on the Ideas Network, so you stay with us.